originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. An intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who took Derby 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pradnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Barrage aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano. A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now, here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'm your host, retired jockey Christina McManigal, and I'm joining you tonight from our Jimmy John's of Lexington, Kentucky studio. Thank you to everyone listening tonight on Sirius 219, XM 206, and to those of you tuning into our website at www.horseracingradio.net. A portion of the proceeds from this show go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. The PDJF provides financial assistance to riders who have suffered devastating on-track injuries. Dozens are seriously injured every year, and some are never able to ride again. So if you are able to help, please visit their website at www.pdjf.org. So our guest tonight is a successful rider from England who recently decided to make a move to the States. He's quickly climbing the ranks at the competitive fairground circuit, already ranking 5th in the standings. He recently ran 2nd aboard long shot Snapper Sinclair in the Grade 2 Risen Star at Fairgrounds for trainer Steve Asmussen, earning them 22 points to the Kentucky Derby. With 41 U.S. victories and counting over $1 million in earnings, it is a pleasure to introduce jockey Adam Biskitsa. Adam, welcome to the show.
Christina, thank you very much for having me on.
So excited to hear your story, Adam. We have a lot to cover in the next hour. But first, I want to ask you, how do you like it here in the U.S. so far?
I mean, everybody's been very welcoming since I've arrived. And it's not my first trip over here, but it's my first serious one. And, the time... this time around, I wanted to do it seriously, and I couldn't believe how the ball's got rolling so far. It happened very quickly, and I'm very pleased the way it's going. I can't complain, but I've always been a huge fan of American horse racing ever since I was a young boy, and it's sort of a dream, if you will, to come over here and just to ride winners. But obviously the way it's been going is it's fantastic. I mean, it's overwhelming almost.
Adam, what are the biggest differences and maybe challenges you've had to overcome between riding in the States and riding overseas?
I find obviously you do race on the same circuit every day, whereas over in Europe, you'll be riding at different tracks every day of the week, where you've got to be not so much more switched on, but it's all an experience game. Definitely on the tracks you ride, you find from when you're apprentice back home, you make so many mistakes just by riding different tracks every day. And the more senior jockeys probably, ride the track a bit better than you. And, it's all an experience game back home. And, I'd ridden for maybe 8 years back home, and I was just starting to, get the ropes of it. And, the winners were steadily rising again. And, I was getting more experience back home. But I chose to sort of enter a different sort of part, if you will, for this winter. And, you know, it's definitely paid off. But the difference is over here is it's on a circuit, and you race around here, you know, probably solidly for 4 or 5 months. And, I mean, there's very little room for, you know, mistake, or you can't really gain a lot of ground with horses, because, you know, you're still riding around the same track. You're going left every day, if you will. So there's very little margin to gain, you know, when you're riding around the circuit in America. But believe me, there's definitely little things and you can tighten up on. And, you know, I've definitely made a few mistakes here and there, but I feel like my sort of riding style does suit the American racing. So at the moment, you know, I'm sort of clicking with it as a rider, but there's still a lot to learn.
Now, you mentioned your riding style, and obviously for those who watch European racing and then they watch racing here in the States, jockeys sit lower on a horse and they don't move nearly as much over here. Did you have to adjust your riding style when you moved over here?
Well, I sort of seen myself as probably quite a stylish rider back in Europe. But ever since I came over here, I probably look very agricultural. I wouldn't be too agricultural in a way, but probably for, you know, American onlookers and trainers and jockeys, I'm definitely noticeable to be riding in a different way. Sometimes it's effective, and sometimes I probably feel like, you know, there is a little bit of polishing up here and there I can do. And listen, I enjoy the challenge, and I'm definitely, you know, I've not come over here not willing to change. So it is a very different way of riding. They're taught different, obviously, the American jockeys, the way they you know, come through the ranks, you know, racing around on a circuit rather than, you know, to the ups and downs and the undulations of European racing. You do have to ride a little bit different, just etc. You know, talking riding with longer and shorter reins, and, you know, riding a bit longer, fit into the horse a bit more, whereas American jockeys tend to ride a lot shorter, and, you know, they have a lot tighter hold of their head. You know, little things like that you just got to adjust to, but, you know, I enjoy the challenge.
I love it, Adam. Now, did you have much experience riding on the dirt before coming over here?
No, Christina, no. Like, in England, and, you know, the majority of Europe, I mean, the only other place I could think of where we race on the dirt is Dubai now. That used to be Polytrack. It was changed, I think, maybe the last 3 years they changed it back to the dirt surface. Because before Maidan was there, it's Nadal Sheba, that was on the dirt. But that would be the only relation us European jockeys would have to the dirt surface. It is a complete different ball game. It's simple racing, but it's not. Like, I mean, there's not a lot to it, but at the same time, everything has to be very smooth and has to be in one rhythm. You break a horse's rhythm, you can't really get them back unless you are thrown in a race. But, you know, these big races, it's all about getting your position early, keeping a nice rhythm. And, you know, it's still on that circuit for the majority of the time. When you're turning in, you're a quarter of a mile from home. So, you know the right time to go.
Well, Adam, let's talk for a minute about Snapper Sinclair, who I mentioned in the introduction. And I actually remember watching the race from Churchill simulcast, and And all I could think was, I have to get that rider on the show. I mean, just a masterful ride. It was just heartbreaking, the fact that you lost the photo. I mean, they took a while to determine the winner. I know they interviewed Miguel Mena. He said he didn't even know if he won the race or not aboard Bravazo. But describe that race to me. And Snapper Sinclair, of course, owned by Jeff Bloom, who has lots of connections to the Horse Racing Radio Network. I've had him on Jock Talk before. So obviously very happy with his progress and his success. What do you think is you know, in his future? And describe that race to us.
Yeah, first of all, it's fantastic to be involved in a horse like Snapper Sinclair. And it was, I'm very appreciative of Mr. Asmussen and to the owners for giving me the opportunity. You know, it's very kind of them to leave me on after the Le Comp. And you know, it just showed, you know, what an improving and, you know, versatile horse he is. He obviously ran in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile there, and he turned that race back around, and he ran a nice race in the comp, and then he's come back to improve. And I mean, he's beaten horses what beat him the time before by length. And, you know, he's a lovely, big, solid animal that looks like he's going to improve for every race. I don't think any sort of race, it doesn't seem to take it out of him anyway. But, no, I mean, as far as the race went, it went to plan. You know, Mr. Asmussen gave me my instructions before the race, and as a jockey, you just obviously, you do your best to do as you're told anyway, and, you know, try not to let it go to plan B. But everything went smoothly, and he ran one heck of a race, and there's a big future for that horse anyway.
Very exciting. Jockey Adam Biskitsa joining us tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, Adam, you obviously have a bright future ahead of you here in the States, but let me ask you now how you first came to that decision to make a move.
Yes, Christine. Well, obviously in England, the turf season goes from the end of March right up to the end of November, and then we don't race on the turf from then back until March, from November, end of November back till March. So there's only all-weather racing, which is Polytrack, which you'd know by. It gets very quiet, and, you know, it just seems the same jockeys, you know, they stick around. Some will go abroad, but it's still just as busy with less racing. And the racing's, I wouldn't say it's poor, but it's very low-grade racing. Like, obviously, in the last 5 years, we've just introduced all these championship all-weather races, which probably bring a higher tier to the all-weather racing, and it, that is good prize money. Them races, they do bring a lot of nice horses to the table, which, you know, some big trainers back home prep them for them races. But at the same time, I probably felt me staying for another all-weather back in England, would I really sort of just, I'd sort of just be going here and there and just going through the motions again. And I felt like I had to sort of set myself another challenge. And I've always been interested in American horse racing, like I said to you, and I've been here in the past and I've wanted to ride. But of course, when you come over to America to work, you have to have the right paperwork, and this is all a process I knew wasn't going to be easy, but from the last time I came, I knew I had to, if I wanted to ride, I was going to have to get everything sorted for me to ride properly and work. And once that process was done within last year, and it was sort of the green light for me to come over here and give it 100% and sort of almost not put a dream to bed, but, you know, if I didn't come and ride in America, it was always going to be in the back of my mind, I should have done it. So I'm one of them sort of people. I do like to set myself a challenge, and it was definitely a big goal for me to come over here and, you know, definitely just, you know, have a feel and see if it was, you know, definitely worth something doing. And obviously the way it's gone, I can't complain, but there's still a long road ahead. But I mean, looking back now, I sort of feel like we've gone up the ladder, as in terms of where I am as a jockey. I think, you know, maybe looking back now, if I sort of went back, I could roll back straight into the same sort of, you know, riding back home. And would it escalate any more on the back of what I've done here? We don't know, but I could sort of see myself building on what's happened so far, and that's where it's at now.
Who are some of the people instrumental in bringing you over here and helping you get yourself established?
Yeah, obviously, there's the connection between me and Joe Sharp. I've known Joe for probably 8 to 9 years now, ever since I was 18, and I came over here as an apprentice back home, and I worked for Mike Stidham just as work experience for 3 months, and Joe was assistant to Mike Stidham back then, and you know, we became good friends ever since then. And obviously Joe's future goals were always to go out and train, but I didn't know back then what is now. But I've been over a few times in between then, from when I first came over. I actually came over when Joe first took out his license the first year he was training. But it was his first year, and, you know, when you're on a pedestal when you first start, and, you know, you've got new owners, and they obviously want the best, and, you know, there's no room for excuse. Obviously, when you first start, you know, you're under a little bit of pressure yourself. So I left and went back home and rode for another 3 years, and came back. And obviously, Joe's a very well-established trainer now. He's at a grade one winner. So I suppose we can't say he's a young and up-and-coming trainer anymore. You know, he's had some very nice horses in his hands so far. And I think he's definitely a trainer that's going to build and grow. And I think he's a fantastic trainer, and I love working with him. And he's like me, you know, he strives for winners, and so do I. So at the moment, I think we're a good little team, and he does exceptionally well at the fairgrounds, and you know, long may it continue. And I can see him sort of progressing, you know, onto bigger and better things in the future.
Did Joe help you get set up with an agent?
It was in discussion. He said, obviously, if you come over here this time, you're going to have to do it properly if you want to ride. And obviously, once my visa was approved back home, and I could do things more properly over here. You know, he said, if you're going to come over and ride, you definitely got to do it properly, get yourself an agent, and get out here hustling early. So he's been good to me, and, you know, teach me the right direction to go. And you need that, obviously. Coming over here, he's a very well experienced guy, and you know, he's been taught from the best people, so his knowledge is invaluable. And sort of, you know, when people like himself are telling you to do things, you do them. So you listen and learn.
So who is your agent now?
Liz Morris. She's done a fantastic job for me so far. And I've got a lot of respect for Liz. As when I rang her, you know, I can't remember when it was. It's probably in October of last year. And Liz was under no illusions that it was going to work out the way it has to now. And I hold a lot of respect for Liz, that, you know, she took upon a challenge as much herself than I have. So, you know, we seem to be working well as a team so far. And, I mean, we're 41 winners into the fairgrounds meet so far. And, I mean, she's definitely put in a lot of groundwork. Because when I first arrived, nobody knew me, and you know, she sort of tied a rope round me and dragged me round the backside there, and she told me exactly, you know, what needs to be done. And you know, it was my first semester here as well, so also she was teaching me, you know, the ropes of and the ins and outs of, you know, where you need to be and at what time. And, you know, so she's been a great teacher to me as well. And I've learned a lot of her, and she I've actually grown very fond of her. And she's a great person, and she's a hard worker, and she's very professional. And she's also got Jack Gilligan, another English jockey on her book. So you could say she sort of has us English in the palm of her hand. But she's doing a very good job, and I'm very pleased with her.
I love to hear that, Adam. By the way, I've had Liz Morris here on Jock Talk in the past. Obviously, she was successful as a rider previously, and we've had Jack Gilligan on the show. So I encourage our audience to go back to the website, that's www.horseracingradio.net, and go to replays and listen to those shows as well. But Adam, is it nice to have, as you mentioned, she has Jack Gilligan's book as well. Is it nice to have him kind of in your corner, and given that he went through a similar experience moving here to the States?
Yeah, Jack's move was a little bit different to mine. His father is, I think, half American, so he automatically has a green card to live over here, whereas I think it was always in the pipeline for, you know, Jack's father to bring Jack over here to ride when he was old enough. Sort of when he's left school, I think he wanted to just give him a couple of rides in England to, you know, you know, a little bit experienced, you know, see whether he enjoyed it first, and obviously he did, and he's a very natural, talented rider. And his father trained in England, so I knew him very well from back home. And his mother obviously came along with them, and they've sort of made a life for themselves back over in America. And, you know, you know, Jack started off his career very well here, and I think he could almost be, you know, a top name one day in America.
You mentioned how hard Liz Morris has been working, and you go out and you hustle and you work horses in the morning for her. And is that different over here than in Europe? Do you do that same? You're out hustling with your agent and working horses, or is that different?
No, back home, the agents do a lot of their work over the phone. You would never see an agent out in coming to a stable in the morning. The stables and barns, if you want to call them, they're too far apart. I mean, you know, you've got people like Mark Johnson, a top trainer, trains for Sheikh Mohammed Godolphin up the northern end of the country of England. And then you could have someone like William Haggis, who, yeah, very successful, trains, you know, the southern part of the country. And, you know, for an agent perspective, it wouldn't be feasible for them to, you know, trek around the country to go and see all these trainers. So they do a lot of work now over the phone, whereas, you know, over here, you know, you're based at one track, so there's no excuse for them to get out of bed and go and see their clientele in the morning. So, it is very different. There's not as much traveling as, you know, being back home, you do a lot more traveling. As if you do go and ride work, sometimes you have to get up, you know, pretty early, and you'll be going riding for your outfits here, there and everywhere. I mean, they could be 2-3 hours away, and then you could be heading off racing another 2 hours away, and then you'd be taking your trip back home in the evening. So some days can be pretty long, but, you know, I find at the fairgrounds, you'd be out most mornings working horses, whereas back home, it could be 2 to 3 days a week.
All right, Adam, we need to take a quick commercial break. Folks, stay with us. You are listening to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Being a jockey may be one of the more dangerous professions in all of sports. In a split second, you can go from the top of the standings to never being able to stand again. I'm Mike Penna, and over the years, I've had the privilege of talking with many of the top jockeys in thoroughbred racing. And to a person, they will tell you that on any given day, before any given race, when they get a leg up, there's no guarantee they'll return the way they left. It's simply the reality of being a jockey. The Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund does amazing work, providing financial assistance to some 60 former jockeys who have suffered catastrophic on-track injuries. Since its founding 10 years ago, the PDJF has disbursed over $7 million to permanently disabled jockeys. And I'm proud to say that the PDJF is the official charity of the Horse Racing Radio Network. But the only way they can continue helping those disabled riders who have given our sport so much is through your generosity and support. So I encourage you to visit pdjf.org and start making a difference today.
This is CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. Ramon Vasquez had a solid week, highlighted by a win in the Gazebo Stakes at Oaklawn aboard Born in Nixa. Vasquez finished the week with 5 wins, 4 seconds, and 1 third place finish from only 17 mounts. Diego Sainz was the second leading rider in wins and third leading rider in earnings for the week after he won an impressive 41% of his mounts. Sainz finished the week with 9 wins, 2 seconds, and 1 third place finish. Finally, the Foundation Detox Jockey of the Week, Irad Ortiz Jr., had a great week as he led North America in wins and earnings and won the Grade 3 House Hope with Economic Model. Ortiz won 42% and finished in the money on 61% of his mounts from 15 wins and 7 second place finishes. This has been CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. For all the latest news in the jockey world, visit JockeyTalk360.com and follow us on Twitter at Jockey Talk.
You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
Night delight and excessive spending, head-to-head as they come toward the top of the stretch. While Mashant is right there, so too Triple Chelsea cuts the corner. Nobody's Fault contributing, charging down the center of the course, looking to gain toward the rail. As they come down to the final furlong is Miss Gossip, Rapid Rhythm down the center of the course. It's One Last Shot who comes to take on Excessive Spending. Triple Chelsea right there. Nobody's Fault. Far outside, here comes Contributing with her charge. They come past the 16th. It's Triple Chelsea and Adam Esquizza. Triple Chelsea to win the Panzeretta by two. Contributing was second. Third photo, One Last Shot with Nobody's Fault.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I'm your host, Christina McManigal, and I am joined tonight by jockey Adam Esquizza. Adam, tell us what you feel hearing to that, listening to that replay of Triple Chelsea winning the Panzeretta Stakes.
Yeah, right. It was a great day, Christina. I mean, she's definitely a filly that's close to my heart now. She wears her heart on her sleeve, and she gave me her best that day. And, you know, we overcame a little bit of, not a great trip in running. And, you know, she pulled it out of the bag, whether, you know, she sort of likes to find a little bit of trouble. She's definitely, a filly I hold in high regard.
And that was your first stakes victory here in the U.S., correct?
I think it was, Christina, yeah.
Pretty exciting day for you, I'm sure. Adam, what's the biggest race you've won in Europe?
There's been a few stakes races. I think there was a Grade 3. Obviously, our bread and butter over in England is handicap racing. And over here, you know, the claiming game's pretty strong, and we don't have so many claimers back home. But when we have a big handicap in England, it's usually like we call it a heritage handicap, whereas obviously the purse can be from 100 to 200,000, and you can see probably very progressive handicappers, and which probably are almost group horses in handicaps. I don't know how well you know about that sort of thing back home, but I was very fortunate to have a good handful of heritage handicap winners. 3 years ago, I won the Cesarewitch handicap, which is a marathon race over 2 miles two for flat horses, and I won that at the start of the week, and at the end of the week I won another heritage handicap, which is called the Cambridgeshire, and which was pretty prestigious. I think I was the first jockey to do the double. I don't think that's ever been done in that fortnight to ride them two winners.
That's impressive. Now, that happened in a short period of time. So as a jockey in Europe, I'm assuming you're traveling all the time.
Well, believe it or not, Christina, they're both at the same track. So
it shows you what I know about European racing.
They're both at my home track, Newmarket, and it was a great day, and it was called the Autumn Double. So they're probably the last two prestigious big heritage handicaps of the year, and we managed to bag both of them, and they're both spare rides. Not as in I just rocked up to the track and got the rides. You know, they were sort of, they're big field races, and, because it's a handicap, a lot of the time some of them can be low weight, so some jockeys can't ride at that weight, and pretty much both of them had low weight, and I managed to sneak on them. And they're both for very nice outfits. And, you know, it got me as a jockey going again back home. Whereas, you know, it's probably the same over in America. When you lose your bug, you obviously you dip in, you know, what is, you know, you're not as in favor. You know, you haven't got that magic number there. You know, taking that weight off a horse, making that difference. So obviously, going back to when you lose your claim as a bug rider, people don't see you. They don't value you as much as in you're seen to prove yourself again. And it had taken me a couple of years to sort of build my clientele up again. And them two races there, they sort of put me back on the map again.
Yeah, it's exactly the same type of challenge here in the States. As you mentioned, when you lose your bug, it's very difficult sometimes. You have to prove yourself that you can ride with the journeyman and you're not getting, you know, any kind of weight allowance. It's sometimes tough. But a question I've been wondering, doing my research on you, and it seems like the apprentice system in Europe is a little bit different from here, where you have a year from your fifth winner with the bug. And different states are different. Sometimes you get 10 pounds, sometimes you just get 5. It's different every state. But how do they do it over there, overseas?
You have to ride a total of 95 winners to ride out your claim. I think in Ireland, you start off with a 10-pound claim. But if we're just going on the basis of England and the way I went through my apprenticeship, you have to ride 25 winners to lose your 7, 50 to lose your 5, and then up until 95 to ride out your claim. And then you're a fully fledged jockey.
Did you ever struggle with your weight?
I have all my career, actually. Ridiculously, but I'm sort of quite a wide sort of, you know, stocky sort of build, and it does have its benefits, you know, for my riding. But at the same time, I'm definitely a jockey that has to constantly monitor it and work on it.
And how do you do that? Do you spend extra time in the gym, or do you just watch what you eat?
I think, yeah, so every single jockey has to be very particular on, you know, what they eat and what they drink. And, you know, I mean, a lot of gym work can almost gain weight. So you've got to be very careful on what sort of muscles you're working on, depending on, everybody's different, so... You know, someone like me, if I worked out a lot, I'd probably end up getting heavier. So I find everybody sort of rows their own boat. But I do like to work out and stay fit, so I obviously can't avoid it. But like I say, we all have our little niche, and we tend to have our own routine on how we lose weight. Some people, you know, they use the saunas a lot rather than, you know, exercising. Some people are just natural. And, you know, some people have to do, you know, everything regardless to try and lose weight. Obviously, the taller jockeys, I wouldn't want to be one of them. I mean, they've got a mammoth task ahead of them to keep their weight down. But in a sense, I'm not completely gifted where I can just walk in at 112 and, you know.
So what do you eat in a typical day?
Well, ever since the universe University in Liverpool decided to help us jockeys out on a diet level in England. They've sort of given a lot of jockeys advice and tried to put them on a diet plan. And I obviously seek help in my weight planning when I was back home in last year. And cut a, you know, long story short, it was mainly, you know, a protein diet, which I try and stick to. It consists of, you know, a lot of chicken and vegetables, and but you can eat as much of it as you like, but at the same time you've got to work out. So I find, you know, when you're eating so much protein, there's only so much your body takes of the protein before it gets rid of it. So it is probably the best diet for me, but like I was saying to you earlier, everybody sort of rows their own boat and everybody's body's different, but it seems to work for me anyway.
I love to hear that the university helped jockeys with their diet, obviously different with jockeys. I remember I met with a nutritionist and someone who was not familiar with jockeys at all, and you know, they told me to eat 1500 calories a day, and you know, just nothing realistic for our type of lifestyle. And do you think something like that is needed here in the States?
Definitely. I mean, it's absolutely invaluable. The help back home is huge. And I think definitely, you know, there should be more help on hand here.
Something that definitely needs to be addressed. Jockey Adam Biskitsa joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, Adam, haven't yet asked you the question, how did you decide and why did you decide to become a jockey?
Well, I think it was always going to happen. I mean, I was in love with it from a very, very young age. My aunt trained in Newmarket, and I was always heavily involved, you know, as young as I can remember. I went through all the stages, riding out in the mornings before I went to school, coming home, working in the evening, and then once I hit about 14, 15, I started pony racing back in England. You know, my love for it was always growing, and it's definitely something, you know, I've always wanted to do. And you know, when I got the chance to do it, you know, it's just give it 100%, and you know, and see where it takes you. And it's sort of, it's been a big part of my life so far. But I don't hold any regrets. And you know, we take each day as it comes, and you know, just embrace it.
Adam, you mentioned your aunt, whose name is Julia Fielden. She's a very successful trainer in Newmarket, as you mentioned. Do you have any other family members involved in racing?
Yeah. My mother, she actually works for my aunt. She's been a crucial part of her team for many years. And my father, he works in racing as well. So, if you will, I'm sort of part of a rich history. My whole family sort of are involved, and it was probably always going to be sort of the next progression for me to come down the jockey route. And, you know, like I was saying to you before, you know, it was probably always something, you know, I'd love to do, and from a very young age. And you know, they've only sort of helped me along the way and pushed me in the right direction. And you know, as any parent of a child, they let their child do what they want to do, and especially, you know, how much I enjoyed it and how much love I did have for, you know, wanting to become a jockey. They only encouraged it. And, you know, my aunt's been, you know, a great part of my career. Obviously, when you're an apprentice back home, you're attached to a trainer, and I was attached to Julia for, you know, a good half of my apprenticeship before I moved on to a bigger yard. And you know, I'm ever thankful to her for, you know, the road she's put me on. And you know, I've learned a lot of just being around, you know, her and you know, the rest of my family. You know, they're all whatever you know, part of racing they're in. You know, it all rubbed off on me, and hopefully in the right way anyway. So
we touched on the apprenticeship as far as weight allowances go, but you just mentioned that your aunt, you worked for strictly when you were an apprentice. And I know back in the day here in the States, a trainer used to have a jockey's contract. And if they wanted to get out of the contract, someone else had to buy it out. Is it a little bit similar in Europe, as or do you lose that contract, if you will, once you lose the bug?
I mean, you are signed to a trainer. If you want to ride and you are under the age of 25 and you're still claiming, if you want to ride, a trainer has to hold your license. So it is very similar, but and also it can work in, you know, a negative way if you did obviously want to leave and, you know, go work for another trainer. You know, they could almost hold your license for the rest of the season. So it has to be the right progression if you do want to, you know, move on to another trainer, but there isn't so much a contract, but you definitely have to be signed under a trainer to ride.
Now, did you attend a jockey school? I know there are a couple there in Europe, or did you just start out from the ground up working for your aunt?
Yeah, it's a bit different to here. You have to pass an apprentice course. It's a 2-week apprentice course, which you have to pass, to be granted your license. So, you can't just sort of rock up to a race course. And I'm not 100% sure on how it does work over in America, but, I know it's definitely a lot more strict back home anyway.
And you said you were, how old were you when you first started galloping horses in the morning?
I'm probably just repeating myself here, but, you know, I was very fortunate to have a trainer as my aunt. And she was willing, obviously, to put me on horses in the morning from a very young age. I mean, I think I started breezing horses when I was 14.
Wow.
You know, just on the odd quiet racehorse that, you know, wouldn't give me too much of a hard time, but at the same time, you know, taught me without having to learn the hard way. But the funny story, there was one horse in the yard that has taught both my cousins how to ride and myself. And, you know, he was a pretty special horse in the yard He taught not only, like I said, me and my cousins. He taught other jockeys, and I could probably name one right now. James Dore used to ride this horse as well. So he's taught all lines of future jockeys. Anyway.
I love it. James Doyle, of course, Sophie Doyle's brother. Was he difficult to ride? And is that why he taught so many other riders? Or was he just an old class horse?
He was. He's just a stable master. He wasn't a bad ride. So he was the perfect introduction for young up and coming riders like we were, just to show us the ropes and not give us too hard of a time at the same time.
You mentioned your cousins. So are your cousins riding professionally now?
Yeah, my one of my cousins does, Shelley Burkett. She's a 3-pound claimer. She's been riding for the past 5 years now. And she's done exceptionally well. She's attached to a trainer called David Amira, which you probably know very well. He's had a lot of American success so far, even Grade One companies. So she works for a very big outfit in the northern end of England. She rides very well, and my other cousin, Ross Burkett, he's assistant to Julia, my aunt.
Did you find that when you first started getting on horses that it came easy for you? Were you naturally athletic? Did you play sports in school?
I mean, I think it probably did come quite naturally. I didn't just sort of wake up one day and think, I'm 5'4" and I should probably be a jockey. It's always been something I've wanted to do. You progress from ponies and then you get on racehorses from a young age and start breezing, and then before you know it, you're old enough to, get your apprentice license out, and things progress from there. So
how old were you when you did start riding professionally?
Well, professionally, obviously, I had to ride out my apprenticeship first, but I was 17 when I first started riding, had my first ride.
Do you remember that day?
I do, yeah. I do, still to this day. She was second. It was at a race course called Kempton. It's on the All-Weather Poly Track, and I was second to Kieran Fallon, beaten half a length, and I never forget what he said to me. He said to me afterwards. He said, "You won't be riding your first winner against me." So I did quite know what he meant at the time, but I didn't think he was too pleased. I was probably going up his inside to try and beat him. So,
do you remember your first win?
Yeah, it was on that filly. I had my first ride, and it's probably in the same sort of senses. The horse that taught the whole family had their first winner on this filly as well. So you could probably say, my family's been a huge help to me. And, it was definitely a family operation when we were all there. And, we were all starting out. We had a good couple of horses, in the yard that, owners were willing for us to, learn and ride on, and we're very fortunate Both my cousins and myself had our first winner on this filly.
I love it. Adam, this time is flying by. We only have about 2 minutes left. But I want to ask you a question. And when I was doing my research, I read this and thought it was pretty interesting. You've ridden for the Queen.
I have indeed, yeah.
That's pretty impressive.
Twice, I think.
Twice.
Huh. Did what, you... I might just get that in there.
Did you win for her?
I didn't. One of them, I think. Well, you've got the she's got the form up there. I might be wrong. I couldn't remember if I was second or third. I think I was third on my second ride for her, and it was at a race course called Bath, and the fog came down an hour before the race, and you couldn't see in front of your hand. Mm. And you can see probably a furlong of the race. So I could have been riding for the Queen. I could have been riding for someone else. But that was my day in the sun, and nobody could see it.
Oh, no. Did she come out and greet you?
No, unfortunately, it wasn't one of her special ones. You know, she has many in training with various trainers. It was just an average day at Bath Racecourse. It's just a low level handicap, and she would only appear herself for her Royal Ascot runners, I think.
Well, Adam, still impressive to say that you've ridden for the Queen, if you ask me. Unfortunately, we are all out of time. Thank you so much for joining us, Adam, and wishing you all the best.
Christina, thank you very much for having me on.
Folks, you can check out this show and replays of all of our other shows on the website at www.horseracingradio.net. While you're there, check out all of the other great shows you can find here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, like Trainer Talk, Equine Forum, and of course Express Bet Radio. Join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with another edition of Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. For our producer Lee Delapina, I'm Christina McManigal, and thank you for listening.